Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. On the programme tonight, non habemus papam. Benedict XVI retires to his Castel Gandolfo. He leaves behind a church in crisis, sex abuse scandals, internal rows and falling numbers. Was he a weak leader or a man who restored truth to the heart of Catholicism? It's our Late Debate tonight after the news, read now by Joan Larkin.
Thank you and good evening from the newsroom. Three men have been arrested after drugs with an estimated street value of almost €2 million were seized in counties Kildare and Dublin. Garthy stopped and searched a van and a car in Castle Warden in County Kildare and recovered cannabis herb worth an estimated €600,000. Three men aged 31, 40 and 50 were arrested at the scene. In a follow-up search of a business premises in the Cookstown area of Talla, a further quantity of cannabis herb with an estimated street value of up to €1.2 million was discovered. Garthy are investigating the discovery of a body in a burned-out car in County Louth. The discovery was made at around 7 o'clock this evening at Giles Quay near Lordship. The scene has been preserved and the state pathologist has been notified. Garthy at Dundalk are appealing for anyone with any information to contact them. Pope Benedict has said a final public farewell, telling a crowd in front of his temporary residence outside Rome that he's preparing to enter the last phase of his life. He's now at Castel Gandolfo, south of Rome. The College of the Cardinals is expected to meet next week to decide when the conclave to select the new pope will get underway. Cardinal Wilfred Napier from Durban in South Africa says he would like to see the new pope to have an academic and pastoral care outlook.
I would look for somebody younger. I would look for somebody who has maybe a similar type of intellectual, academic background to Pope Benedict, but also with the type of pastoral outreach and care that Pope John Paul manifested.
Finally, the leadership of the 24/7 Frontline Alliance, which represents 70,000 state employees, including nurses and Garthy, has decided to step up its campaign of resistance to the Croke Park proposals on pay and conditions. Meanwhile, the Public Service Executive Union and Impact have recommended that members should vote in favour of the proposed deal. However, the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation and the Civil Public and Services Union have recommended their members should reject it. The weather forecast staying dry tonight with clear spells and frost in parts of Munster and South Leinster. Temperatures between -1 and +5 degrees. That's it from the newsroom for now. News again at 11.
Joan, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carvel. Joining me tonight to debate Benedict XVI's legacy are campaigner for child protection and clerical abuse survivor Mary Collins, journalist and author Susan McKay, Father Joe MacDonald from St Matthew's Parish in Ballyfermot in Dublin, and independent Senator Ronan Mullen. Thank you. With those words, Pope Benedict XVI withdrew to behind the walls of his summer residence at Castel Gandolfo outside Rome to begin his retirement. It's the first time in 600 years that a pope has resigned rather than died in the job. 3 hours ago, the papacy became vacant. In a symbolic gesture, the Swiss guards who stood sentry quit their posts and the massive wooden doors of the hilltop residence were closed. At the same time, the papal apartments in the Vatican were locked and will not be opened until a new pope is elected. The official papal ring and papal seal have been destroyed. In a few moments, we'll be debating Benedict's legacy, how he dealt with the scandal of clerical sex abuse and its cover-up, the direction he brought the church over the past 8 years, and we look ahead to the challenges facing the next pope. First, though, let's go live to Rome and join RTE's Fran McNulty, who is still there tonight. Fran, it's been a long day. What's the scene there tonight? Is everything quiet and down somewhat?
Very quiet, Audrey. In fact, people are now beginning almost entirely to concentrate on the future and what is in store, and lots of talk of cardinals, possibilities, potential and change. And the word I've heard mentioned most, speaking to clerics of all ranks over the past 24 hours, is governance. A lot of people are turning attention to the fact that the new pope needs to be an effective chief executive. He needs to be popular with the workers. He needs to be good with the books. He needs to be willing to make hard decisions and get order, seize control of the Vatican, because it was striking, as you said in your opener there, where effectively he leaves behind him a church in chaos. There are significant issues within the Catholic Church that need to be dealt with, and it is that reality that the College of Cardinals will have in mind. And in all the...
Fran's gone. We'll hope to get him back. But are you there, Fran?
I am, Audrey. Sorry, I'm still with you. We may have some dropout, but the point I was making was that the College of Cardinals, in their informal meetings over the next couple of days before they get together officially on Monday, will be discussing these issues and undoubtedly lining up the potential runners, the people who would have various strengths and weaknesses.
Absolutely. Let's just look back for a moment to today, Fran, and that sense of history that was there through the Pope's Benedict's resignation and retirement. Just describe the day for us from your perspective.
It was really quite remarkable. I mean, it started off very... Joan broadcast all round St. Peter's Square of the Pope leaving the papal apartment. But really, it didn't strike until the helicopter rose. And I was standing on a building just a couple of 100 yards away from the Vatican Gardens. And it was remarkable to see the helicopter rise. It took off and in uniform. It just circled Vatican City. And you really got the sense of a significant moment. And I'm looking at some pictures online this evening of the helicopter, Shepherd One, just passing the Basilica, and it's such a striking picture. And Vatican Television televised the whole event, and it was remarkable. It was almost more remarkable, Audrey, to watch it on a screen than it was to physically be there. In St. Peter's Square, there were people crying, there were people clapping, there were people applauding the crowds that had gathered. But to watch the television pictures. Tony Connolly did a report on 6-1 this evening, which I watched here from Rome, and the pictures were just so striking. It's such a historical moment, and I suppose for people of faith and non-faith alike, just to be in Rome and to witness that sort of, it hasn't happened in 600 years. We now have a retired Pope, and I was speaking to some priests this evening from America, and they were just saying, this is very, very strange.
And looking ahead then again, you mentioned that things really get underway next week. Just take us through that. When is the conclave and when do they hope to have a new pope elected?
I was listening to one of the Vatican spokespeople this evening, and he was saying that's the question he's been asked most over the past 2 days. Nobody really knows when conclave will begin. What we do know is that the College of Cardinals begin to meet on Monday in what they call a congregation. And this is like an official gathering of the cardinals, and it happens within Vatican City. They sit down, they begin to discuss, I suppose, in a sort of if we talk about a formal debating, you know, they each have a chance to put forward views, to speak on what they see are the relevant issues. But most crucially, remember, the vast majority of voting cardinals, Audrey, are already in Rome. Some aren't, by the way. But over these days and over this weekend and before they sit down on Monday at all, the word fraternising was used. People will be, discussions will be had, meetings will be had, names are being mentioned already, and the type of people that are needed are being fleshed out. But what I have heard several cardinals say, and I've spoken to some, they have said, it is not about location, it is not about age, whilst everybody says a young pope or a younger pope would be better. It is about the person with the right quality. So for all the talk we hear about a third world pope or whatever else, the main concentration that a lot of the cardinals have is finding the right person with the right skills.
Fran, great to talk to you this evening. Thank you very much indeed. That's RT's Fran McNulty joining us live this evening from Rome. Well, Benedict has been described as a reluctant pope. It seems he didn't really want the job after John Paul II died in 2005. And yet the conclave which elected him was one of the shortest in papal history. His papacy, though, has been overshadowed with the exposure of brutal sexual abuse by priests and its cover-up by many bishops here and around the world. Financial scandals, power struggles and falling church numbers have also plagued him. But there were some high points too in his papacy, not least his successful trip to the UK back in 2010. Well, here's a look back at some of Benedict's time in the Vatican.
Well, it's been total confusion down here until this point, but it does now look as if that is white smoke coming out.
Dear brothers and sisters, Habemus Papam, Cardinalem Ratzinger.
A pope. He is Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger of Germany, to be known henceforth as Benedict XVI, chosen quickly on only the fourth ballot of a conclave far shorter than many expected.
The new pope, Benedict XVI, has received messages and support from world leaders following his
election. The pope is facing a growing scandal of child sexual abuse by priests in the Roman Catholic Church, not least in Ireland, and he now has promised imminent action.
As a sign of my deep concern, I have written a pastoral letter dealing with this painful situation. I ask all of you to read it for yourselves with an open heart and in a spirit of faith. My hope is that it will help in the process of repentance, healing.
This first letter from a pope exclusively about clergy who abuse children breaks some new ground. Benedict XVI says to recover from its grievous wound, the church here must acknowledge serious sins committed against defenceless children. You have suffered grievously, and I am truly sorry, he tells victims.
Your Holiness, I am delighted to welcome you to the United Kingdom, and particularly to Scotland, on your first visit as Pope. Much has changed in the world during the nearly 30 years since Pope John Paul's visit.
You'll be hearing Pope Benedict later in this hour, giving his thoughts for the day for Christmas Eve.
Dear friends from Scotland, England, Wales, and indeed every part of the English-speaking world, I want you to know that I keep all of you very much in my prayers. I pray for your families, for your children, for those who are sick, and for those who are going through any form of hardship at this time. I pray especially for the elderly and for those who are approaching the end of their days. I ask Christ, the light of the nations, to dispel whatever darkness there may be in your lives and to grant to every one of you the grace of a peaceful and joyful Christmas. May God bless all of you.
He says the scandals have seriously undermined their credibility and effectiveness. He says he has decided to order an inspection known as an apostolic visitation to certain dioceses, seminaries and religious congregations which have yet to be named. A church source said that visitation would be with a view to introducing new regulations to curb perceived abuses.
The decision I have made after much prayer is the fruit of a serene trust in God's will, the deep love of Christ's Church. I will continue to accompany the Church with my prayers, and I ask each of you to pray for me and for the new Pope.
History there on the left, the Cardinal Secretary of State, and he will be the Carmelengo because all the appointments that exist in the government of the Vatican cease at the moment the Pope ceases to be Pope at 8 o'clock Italian time, 7 o'clock local time.
Some of Benedict XVI's 8 years in the Vatican. That montage was compiled by Richie Byrne. A reminder of my guests here on Late Debate: campaigner for child protection Mary Collins, journalist and author Susan McKay, Father Joe MacDonald from St Matthew's Parish in Ballyfermot in Dublin, and independent Senator Ronan Mullen. Let's go back to 2005, Joe MacDonald. How did you feel? What did you think when Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger was announced as Pope?
Well, Audrey, I'm almost embarrassed to recall it, because at that stage I was still in seminary, not far of ordination, and I remember there were about 60 of us gathered in the television room waiting on this great announcement and so on. And to tell you the truth, when the announcement came and there were various degrees of competency in Latin and so on round the table, but eventually realised that it was, of course, Joseph Ratzinger. And I'd say about two-thirds of the group sort of jumped to their feet and cheered and clapped. But I have to be honest and say I was one of those who put the head in the hands and said, oh no, I'm not so sure about this. So my beginning with Pope Benedict was definitely one of trepidation.
Why were you so concerned?
I think I was probably influenced by a lot of what I heard in the media, sort of a popular press thing. I know people say, God, you should have known more, you were in the seminary and so on. But there was just that feeling. I suppose people had said maybe it'll be somebody from South America, you know, maybe it'll be a black pope or whatever. And then suddenly this man who probably associated with church discipline, and I don't know, I suppose almost the German sort of, almost I had an impression. And you see, one of the problems was that I had come through the whole John Paul II pontificate, and I didn't have to work hard to love John Paul II. I just loved him instantly, and I was one of the people in Galway as a young fella, and I was totally taken by him. And then suddenly there's this stark contrast, you know, and I'm amazed that I find myself here tonight, having moved from that trepidation through a sort of a growing respect and then admiration, and amazed to find myself and say now that I grew to love him.
Well, we'll talk more about that in a minute. Mary, back in 2005, what did you think?
I was disappointed, I've got to say, when his name was announced. It didn't come as a surprise at that point. I think many people had a feeling he was going to be elected. The reason for my disappointment was that I was hoping for somebody who would be, if you like, slightly leaning to the more liberal side, and it was well known that he was more conservative. It was also known that in his job in the CDF, many priests and theologians had been silenced.
That's the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith.
Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. So we knew in that respect how orthodox, how fixed, if you like, he was on that area. So I was disappointed we were getting another conservative pope. But I suppose I had some hope. I mean, you had to have, or I felt I had to have, that we have a new man coming in, maybe on the child protection, child abuse area. He has to have learned something from the work he's been doing, because he was dealing with all the abuse cases. So my hope was, he's coming in, he's a new man, he will make changes. He will take on this problem. He will deal with it. He will deal with the bishops who have been protecting the abusers. We will see change. That was my hope. That was my hope. But
at any point over the last 8 years, did you view him as your pope?
I found it very difficult. I mean, there's things he's done that are positive insofar as he did acknowledge that abuse happened, that there were abusive priests, which we hadn't had before. He apologised for the abuse. He did reach out in some way to survivors. But on the other hand, it was circumscribed. I mean, we have what was just said earlier there, that he did say serious sins. There were serious sins committed against defenceless children. Yes, that was important, he said that, but it would have been far more important and have far more impact if he had have said there were serious crimes committed against defenceless children. Because the problem we've had over so many years, that bishops and colleagues of abusing priests just looked on it as a sin and did not think of it as a crime. So in that sense, he was breaking some new ground, but not enough, which was disappointing.
We will be debating his handling of the sexual abuse scandals and cover-up in detail in a few minutes. Moving on to you, Susan, back in 2005. I mean, what were your thoughts back then on this man becoming pope?
Well, I suppose I'm different probably from everybody else in the panel here, in that I'm an atheist and a Protestant atheist at that. And I'm also a feminist, you know, so what my attitude to popes is that, you know, there's not that much difference between them. And certainly I wouldn't have any high expectations of Cardinal Ratzinger, because I had followed his inactivity on the child sexual abuse cases, and I haven't been disappointed in that, I must say. I think he's been very weak. I agree with Geoffrey Robertson QC, who's written a book about this papacy, and he describes him as the pope who buried his head in the sand, the ostrich pope. And I think,
but he wants him arrested for
yes, and he also thinks that there probably will, now that he is no longer the nominal head of a state, that there may well be a cause for him to be indicted in the criminal courts.
Moving on to you, Ronan, on this point, just back then, 8 years ago, were you optimistic? Were you hopeful?
Well, I would have been, I suppose, wishing whoever was chosen well, because it's a huge and onerous responsibility. I think I remember feeling a certain trepidation for him, because I knew it wouldn't be popular in some quarters. I already knew that Ratzinger was, you know, easily caricatured as the Rottweiler, or the, you know, we've already heard some of it this evening, you know, that he was the guy who was kind of, you know, slamming down heretics and supposedly very hard on them. You know, there was a whole narrative around what type of guy he was. But I knew enough from talking to people who knew him personally that this wasn't actually a true picture, that this was actually a very gentle man who felt he had a job to do to protect the integrity of the teachings of the church, was very interested in dialogue, respected his opponents. I mean, somebody like Cardinal Martini would have been at the opposite end of the theological spectrum. You know, I was reading today how he was always held in deep respect. And I have to say, I had already begun to read some of his stuff, and I think that the real way to understand this character Ratzinger is actually to read him, because there is a wonder. I just have that book there in which he quotes Archbishop Dermot Martin quite a bit. It's a book called Light of the World. He gave a number of interviews to a German journalist called Peter Seewald, starting back, I think, in the 80s. The first one was called Salt of the Earth. And I think Seewald actually came back to his faith as a result of the encounter with Ratzinger. But what comes across is he gives a straight answer to a straight question. You know, he'll say, are you optimistic about this? He'll say, well, to be frank, no. And then he'll explain why. He's actually very, you come to see him as a really deep thinker and as somebody, as one senior friend of his said to me, a person who has a deep love for the truth. But if people are interested, and I think this is always a moment when people, even, you know, non-believers, dare I say so, you know, there's a fascination that people have with the Catholic Church, and people will, you know, be listening with a bit more interest in these days because of the big events and the drama and the visual nature of it. One thing I would recommend to people, I actually went along this evening, I heard about it by accident, that Archbishop Dermot Martin was celebrating a Mass in the Pro Cathedral. And it was, I think, one of the best homilies I've ever heard. It was just a beautiful summation. And he's a press officer, Annette O'Donnell, formerly of this parish, told me that it's up on the website. But he just describes Benedict the man and the different aspects of the way he was a teacher. He's first encyclical focused on love. People were expecting more pronouncement against things. He wanted to get back to the core, that a relationship with Jesus Christ is what's really important. And actually, Dermot Martin also spoke about how he had witnessed personally, you know, the horror that Pope Benedict had felt about the abuse of children. And he kind of testified personally today to how Benedict saw these things, which I thought that was a very good insight from a very credible person. So okay. I thought I'd draw attention to it.
Mary, yes. Yeah, just on what Roland said there about, you know, we've heard some of this already tonight. I was sort of putting him down as a heretic basher. I'd like to say any comments I'm making about is about Benedict the Pope and his actions, not about the man himself. Being gentle and humble and nice and pleasant. I'm sure he was all those things, and as Ronan sayings, if you knew him, he was lovely and all the rest of it. I can only judge the man and only speak about the man from his actions and what we have seen. I'm not making any personal comments about the man as an individual.
Yeah. Okay. That's a very fair clarification, by the way.
Okay.
And I'm really just saying, I suppose, that we get a very black and white picture. It's not that you're necessarily wrong. It's certainly debatable, but it's that that's all you ever hear. It's that caricature of disciplinarian when there was so much more.
We are going to debate his handling of the clerical sexual abuse scandals, because that is, for many, many people, the overarching legacy of his papacy. So we're going to do that after this break.
RTE Radio 1.
Text Late Debate on 51551.
Well, the debate on Benedict the 16th's legacy is continuing here in the studio with my guest, journalist and author Susan McKay, campaigner for child protection Mary Collins, Father Joe McDonald from St Matthew's Parish in Ballyfermot in Dublin, and independent Senator Ronan Mullen. Joe, I'll come back to you on the clerical sexual abuse issue. One man tonight representing abuse survivors on TV said that no one had more knowledge or power to prevent the abuse of children and prevent its cover-up than Benedict XVI as Cardinal Ratzinger, and yet he didn't use that power. Would you agree with that?
Not at all. No, of course I wouldn't. I'm amazed sometimes at what people are prepared to say, and even some of Susan's comments that he was very weak. I think she may have been quoting somebody else as well, but I just think they're unfair. They're unfair criticisms. And, you know, as been said already, Audrey, I hope this debate will go beyond child sexual abuse. I mean, it's an important topic. It's a significant topic in his papacy. I personally, when Benedict XVI says that he's truly sorry, I believe him. I believe that this Pope's heart was broken. Not only by the scandal itself of child abuse, but also the inept way that it was dealt with.
Now, but did he acknowledge the global cover-up of the abuse?
No, I mean, I think he himself was on a journey as well. I mean, you know, people even here tonight are distinguishing between the man, and then we also have the Cardinal Prefect, and now we have Benedict XVI. So we have to be clear what we're talking about. I mean, there was a discovery and a painful road, and, you know, people say, well, he could have said sorry more often, he could have had... Personally,
but what did he do to prevent the abuse of children?
Well, I think initially the problem was that the church handled it badly and that it was all over the place. But I think what he tried to do then was, and I would see some frustration on his part dealing with it, to try to make it more centralised in the dealing with it. But you see, the problem with that is you're relying on the cooperation of the church throughout the world in that, and you're relying on the good faith of people all over the world. And the fact of the matter is that what we're talking about here, wider than just sexual abuse, is corruption. Corruption, which includes obviously what you've just referred to in terms of
cover-up. But was it not the case that, as far as the Vatican was concerned at the time, he was the top man? He had the power to deal with this.
Well, no, I think gradually that he himself wanted to take a more hands-on. He wasn't the top man. His responsibility was a congregation for the doctrine of the faith. But you see, we're all very wise now and saying where it should have gone and what should have happened.
As Pope, he had the power.
Well, I didn't think it was... If you're asking me specifically about as Pope, I think what he did as Pope was good. And I think if you're confining it to that, I thought your question was wider than his papacy. If you're talking about in the past 8 years, I would be fairly comfortable insofar as one can be. There'll always be more to be done in this. Of course there'll be more to be done. But, you know, his own words about being truly sorry and his own request that his letter be read with an open heart. It's very difficult, Audrey, for people to read that letter with an open heart. I mean, Susan has been honest enough to tell us she's here tonight as an atheist. I'm here as a person of faith.
Okay.
So we come completely different places.
Okay, Mary, what do you say to what you've heard from Joe?
I can believe what Joe has said, that Pope Benedict was very sorry for the abuse that happened to children. He was very sorry it happened. He condemned the abusers. That is fine, and that was a step forward from what we had before. What he did not do was penalise one single bishop anywhere in the world who had protected and covered up for an abuser. And if you are not punished for what you have done wrong, what is to stop somebody else doing the same thing? Not one bishop was removed because he had covered up for abuse. We have Cardinal Law still living in the Vatican. He's still living there through the 8 years of Pope Benedict. That's what I would ask. You're saying, what did he do? He could have shown that his bishops were accountable for their actions, for allowing abusers to be moved from parish to parish, to go on abusing, for children to have been abused who should never have been abused. He did not... He apologised for what the abusers had done. Never in his whole papacy did he apologise for what his bishops had done. And that, I think, is so important. We didn't want, survivors like me didn't want sorry, sorry, sorry repeated over and over again. And it's not that I don't believe he was sorry for what happened to children. I do. But there was not one time did he come down and penalise under canon law, and there is a penalty on the canon law which applies to bishops. Not one time did he actually implement that. And I would ask why, if he really wanted to take action to prevent it happening in the future. And the only way to prevent mistakes from the past happening in the future is to have some consequences for your actions.
How can you argue with that, Joe McDonald, when you look even at bishops like Ray Field and Eamon Walsh, who offered their resignations, but the Pope rejected their resignations?
Audrey, people may find this hard to believe, but in the past 8 years under this pontificate, the severity and the sanction on priests who have committed this terrible crime have been very, very clear. I'm not going to name individuals, but the two things that have happened: number one, people have been removed from priesthood.
Yes.
Number one. And secondly, people having been removed from priesthood have been further their congregation, for example, where there are members of congregation,
been
asked to remove.
The abusers have been removed.
Okay, yeah, but just to say this, the second bit is people sometimes say they should be cast out then of their religious house or whatever. And I know, I'm not saying you're saying this, Marty, but it's a popular conception. And the question that always arises then, when that happens, who monitors the individual as they go free off? And there are people in this country who have been convicted, priests who have been convicted, who are now cut off completely from the church, and nobody knows where they are or what they're doing.
But that's not Mary's point. She, you know, she acknowledges that.
Yes, but absolutely.
Her point is that none of the bishops have been penalised.
But how can we say that if we read what he asked us to read with an open heart and what he says to the Irish bishops? I mean, he castigated the Irish bishops.
Absolutely, I was going to say
it's only words.
No, no,
it's not actions.
But Marty, you can't say he didn't do it.
He did nothing.
You can't say that he didn't do it. And now, then, when you hear that he did, he said that he only uses words. What is he to do?
Remove the men who are guilty.
But how? Remove the bishop.
Yes.
Remove what bishop for not doing what?
He can remove any bishop he wants for not protecting children, for not protecting his flock, for allowing children to be abused, for criminal acts in some countries. He is able to remove bishops who come out, like Bishop Morris in Australia, who came out with a pastor a letter and said he thought it might be a good idea if there was a discussion about women priests to take up because of the lack of priests to fill the gap. And for writing that pastor a letter, Bishop Morris was removed. He was perfectly capable of removing him, but he hasn't removed Bishop Mahony, Cardinal, any of these people.
Well, I'd be very careful about mentioning
Cardinal Brady.
With respect, Marty, you're mentioning two men there, both Bishop Mahony, who's a retired bishop, and the present cardinal, and it's very easy to do that. But you see, we're not mentioning, because the Pope wasn't directly involved, there are bishops have paid a high price for their dealing with this subject.
Yes, and they're not on a pedestal anymore.
No. See, that's very easy to say that. People like Brendan Comiskey or people like John McGee paid a high price, a very high price indeed. Now, if you're telling me, did the Pope come and knock on their door and say, you must go? There's a process that wasn't confined to state, was ecclesiastical as well.
No, they resigned.
But hold on, Mary. You see, that's very simple. But if you talk to John McGee or you talk to Brendan Comiskey, these were men, and I believe they paid a high price. Maybe they should have. That's not the issue. But to say that nobody paid the price, this scandal in the church has touched every level. And now you're dismissing it as mere words.
I did not say anything about men who had a conscience, like Bishop Moriarty here in Ireland. He had a conscience. He said he should have stood up and done something, and he retired because of that and resigned from that. A man of conscience. He has suffered for that, I'm sure. He's probably suffered a lot of pain for what he didn't do. I'm not saying that bishops have not in some way suffered. They've lost respect, they've lost trust, they've lost position. But there was not one outward sign of penalty coming down from above. All these other things saying behind the scenes this happened or that happened. Without the media, we wouldn't have had Bishop Comiskey's resignation. We wouldn't have had other resignations.
Okay, Susan
It wasn't
McKay.
The Pope that took them out of their positions.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything that Mary has said, and I heard a discussion the other day in which various church leaders were admitting that in about three quarters of the bishoprics in the world there is still no strategy for dealing with sexually abusing priests, you know, so this is the reality. And I do think it's a bit offensive for Father Joe McDonald to keep saying that everything that Mary is saying is easy to say and too simple and so on, because I don't think anything Mary is saying is simple. Mary is speaking out a very hard, difficult,
Mary's making
vile
judgments,
experience.
Severe judgment, Susan.
Yes,
very
she is,
severe
but she
judgments.
Has every right to make
well,
those
I would,
judgments.
I would say and not to mention.
Just let Susan
so
finish
you've
her point,
for a long
and then
time.
Yeah.
I think you should have some manners. I think that what we're looking at here is that, you know, I find it offensive, this notion that both of the clerical people here keep saying about Pope Benedict and his open heart, you know.
You're a cleric.
Open heart, open heart. Where is the open heart in the attitude, the completely rigid attitude to human sexuality which exists in the Catholic Church, which this child sexual abuse is undoubtedly part of? The Catholic Church is the only Christian church which insists on total celibacy in its priesthood. Now, we need to explore the relationship between that and between its attitude to women and the complete the rejection of women as priests, for example, as a grave sin, similar to the sin of abusing a child. You know, these kind of, and the anti-homosexuality, the total opposition to contraception, the total opposition to abortion, even if a woman's life is in danger. There's a very, very punitive attitude to human sexuality. Just before Christmas, we were instructed by the church that there were no animals in the manger when Jesus was born. There was, however, apparently a woman who was still a virgin giving birth to a child. You know, we are treated like children by the church. We are treated as people who have no ability to make our own decisions about our sexuality and our lives. And, you know, do priests go into the church because they are already child abusers and they think that it's a safe place to be because they won't be caught and punished? Do they go in there as people who want to serve their faith but then discover that their sexuality is channeled and in the wrong directions and they end up picking on vulnerable children? We don't know these things, but there's no open heart in the church to look at them, and there needs to be, because increasingly I think that even people that I know who are Catholics and practicing Catholics are so detached from the teachings of the hierarchy at this stage that they're quite oblivious to them. There was a study published in the UK yesterday which showed that Catholics, only 14% of Catholics admit to feeling any guilt whatsoever about the fact that they utterly disregard the church's teaching on most issues to do with sexuality. The church even disregards its own teachings on sexuality. If you look at the fact that they and Pope Benedict was very strong on this, they are totally opposed to the use of condoms, even to protect people against the spread of AIDS. Yet we all know, anybody who's been to Africa or India or other developing countries knows, that the Irish missionaries out there are dishing out condoms left, right and centre, as indeed they should be.
Ronan, what's your view on the sexual abuse? Because that's what we started off talking about.
No, I'm not going to comment further, and I'll tell you why. I like nothing better, Audrey, than sitting down, and I have many good friends who are non-believers, people who are angry with the church on some things. Sometimes they're right about their experiences. But the general experience I have with non-believers or with people of different denominations is that there's a real search for the truth, and there's a search to try and understand each other. And this debate that we're having here this evening is nothing like a search for the truth. It fulfills all the worst expectations of the many people I know who feel that the media in this country are incapable of taking religion seriously or incapable of taking the church seriously. And when they do deal with the issues that are very important, they only focus on certain issues, and then they come at them in a very uninformed way, and they take certain truths and half-truths and use certain points propagandistically, and half-truths get mixed up with lies, and things that are completely uninformed are said, and there's no time to challenge them. And it leaves an awful lot of people of faith who take this issue very seriously, who are concerned about sin and about crime, and who were gutted by what went on in the church, but who have a lot of hope about the way the church has moved to deal with these things under the leadership of Benedict, including prior to his time as Pope, when he effectively imposed martial law on the church in 2002 and really cut across the rights of priests right, left and centre, so that there'd be no possibility that abusers would slip through the cracks. There's people who actually know what went on, who know that there were failures in the church, and there was particular chaos in the Vatican in the mid to late 90s, and it is clear, I think, to anyone who's honest, that there was very bad handling of situations and inadequate handling of situations. But people who are interested in the truth aren't just interested in saying, well, if I'm against you tribally, I'm going to take everything I can find and I'm going to throw it at you whether it's true or not. I've heard Susan say several things here this evening that I know to be factually wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, but there's no point in my even contradicting them, because if I do, I'll only start to rant.
Okay.
So it's not a good night for RTE and getting to the core of the issues.
Just a very quick point. I just want to concur with what Ronan has said, and my question as I listen to Susan is, should we be here? Like, are we actually doing the church?
We should be in pub, actually.
We actually should get up and leave. For the very simple reason.
Just let me finish. You'll just finish your point.
You had a great run there and you told me to have manners. So if you just hold fire for a moment. No, just let me finish. Sorry. With respect, Audrey, you know, you did clarify, you said we were talking about the child sexual abuse. When you went to Ronan, you said no Ronan about child sexual abuse. Susan got a free run. She bombarded everything you could except the kitchen sink. Anti-church. Anti-church agenda. I was amazed at you describing about what the church does to we. You're not we. You've said at the beginning, you don't belong. You're an atheist. You have acknowledged from the very beginning that you don't belong to this. You actually began disrespectfully
by saying, let me finish.
You began disrespectfully by saying these popes, there's not much difference between them. You set out your stall very clearly. But what I'm amazed at is that in RTE, you got a free run there. You got a free run. You took every topic you could and not only listed the topics that you want to discuss, but give your own half-baked, uninformed version of that. Now, I have a great problem sitting through that.
Well, please feel free to walk out.
We won't give you a free run. Don't worry.
I think that this is absolutely ridiculous. I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist for a long time. Before that, I worked in a rape crisis centre. I have a long history of involvement in issues of violence against women, violence against children, child sexual abuse. I'm very well informed. I'm interested in religion. I am not disrespectful. I have many friends who are practising Catholics, many friends who are practising Protestants. I happen to believe all of the things that I have said. They are based on many years of experience and knowledge. It is totally childishly insulting for Ronan to sit and say, "Oh, we should be in a pub. This is pub talk." This is not the sort of thing I talk about in the pub. It's not uninformed.
It's not public service broadcasting. It's shock jock type radio.
Well, I've obviously touched on
We can't hear you all when you're talking together. So, Mary, you come in at this point.
I think this is typical, really, of clergy and those in the church who, not clerical, but who can do nothing but defend. They will not hear the truth. They will not acknowledge the truth. And the only way they know how to defend the church is to attack those who are speaking the truth and try and put them down, try and make little of them. As Ronan there was throwing out words like lies and uninformed ignorance, I was speaking. And Father Joe here on my left, he became extremely angry because I told the truth about what Pope Benedict has said and done about the bishops who covered up for abusers. He wants me to feel sorry for those bishops who have not been penalised. I was asked here to speak about the Pope and his actions over the last years. I'm speaking about that. Now, if Ronan and Father Joe don't like it and don't like the truth, I'm sorry, but that is the truth. And I find it very, very difficult to hear the shouting and roaring that's going on when we were here to debate Pope Benedict, his 8 years. And we know the sexual abuse crisis is a big part of that. And the clergy and the church want to get away from it, pretend it's all over, it'll go away. And that is not the truth.
That's false.
It is still there. And by not discussing it and wanting to ignore it and accusing those of us who are still concerned for children, accusing those of us as being obsessed, telling lies, attacking the church. I'm a person of faith, Ronan.
I'm not saying you're not.
And you're throwing that around as if those of us who have problems, I'm not accusing you of anything, Mary.
In fact, it's about 15 years ago. I can remember talking about how truthful you were and how much people owed to you for telling the truth. So I'm not defensive.
I've never lied in my life about anything to do with the church.
I have no doubt about that. And you didn't hear me say that about you. But what I'm saying is, I'm certainly not defensive. I don't think my colleague, who I haven't had the pleasure of meeting before, or if I have, it's been on a rare occasion. But what I hear is actually not so much defensiveness. I would love to have a debate where we could tease through the criticisms that are fair and then say, and here are the criticisms that are unfair. But sadly, you can never do that in RTE because it's a preset agenda. It's about topics that are constantly discussed. But nobody's going to talk tonight because nobody is interested in organising a debate about Benedict and his interest in the environment. He was described as the first Green Pope. About his Regensburg address and the what happened with the Muslims. Was it a disaster or was it a disaster that converted to good? That would be regarded as boring because it doesn't fall into the easy category of, you know, let's nail the church for being out of touch on women and for having completely screwed up on abuse, which we know it did. And I'm not saying we should close down that discussion, but we have to it's far from it. I've never run away from a discussion, Mary. I think you know that much.
The destruction of children's lives is more important than green shoots and environment and race.
That must never be forgotten. You are right. But the point about it is, if this was in other countries, they are having much more broad-ranging debates. And they also know about abuse. And they also know about women priests, married priests, homosexuality, abortion, contraception. The same set menu is all we ever get in Ireland.
Well, they happen to be very important.
They're important, but they're not the only thing. And what you're distracting when you only focus on those things is the search that is going on in every human heart for about the meaning of life, love, the question of a relationship with God. And we shouldn't be afraid to discuss those things either, because they matter, even to politicians, believe it or not. They matter to people all over the country, but I just don't think people are being well served when all you can do on these issues is organise a row.
Of course they matter deeply to people, and that's why so many people are in a crisis of their faith in relation to the Irish Church. And I have been looking at the international media in relation to Pope Benedict's resignation, and child sexual abuse is always in the first paragraph of all of the stories all over the world because it is the biggest crisis that this church has faced. And, you know, if you think about, I mean, I think Mary McAleese, for example, has been very helpful in the way that she has talked about the grave wounds that are given to gay people in this country and other countries because of the Vatican's completely obdurate attitude of hostility to homosexuality.
Okay, Joe, you wanted in there.
Audrey, Pope Benedict, for me, has been an extraordinary teacher. By standards of people who have no faith, who have nothing to do with church or anything, they acknowledge one of the greatest living intellects in the world. He has constantly taught, he continues to teach. He taught today as he left Rome, he taught humility. Where is he going? He's going to spend the rest of his life in prayer. I certainly can't come here as a Catholic priest and not talk about Benedict as a great teacher, a great pastor, one who was brokenhearted because of church scandal, and one who had the extraordinary courage and humility
to resign from
his position as Pope. He didn't do it lightly.
Dialoguing with Jürgen Habermas, the neo-Marxist leading intellectual, regarded by the Jews as the best Pope in terms of the record, in terms of Jewish relationships. Some major high points around the whole debate around faith and reason delivered in four main addresses. The Regensburg one, which was controversial because of the Muslim thing, but there was much more to it than that. The speech in Westminster Hall when every former Prime Minister of Britain was there, the speech in the German Bundestag, and there was one before what were called the chercheurs in France, searchers of every kind, atheists, religious believers, intellectuals gathered in the Collège de Bernardin in Paris in 2009. Hugely interesting dimensions to this guy that we rarely ever discuss. I can't actually make an apology for making my objection to the
Audrey, can I just finish?
We've never heard
just
about
just going
one, one sentence, just to say this. To go back to what Mary said, at no point, you know, Mary talked about the truth and has not been able to take the truth. What Ronan has just said and what I have just said is also the truth. True. We don't have a monopoly on the truth. I wouldn't be wanting to undermine what Mary said. I have huge respect because I think she has done the church a great service.
I agree with that.
I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about that. I don't think I have ever heard anybody, clerical or otherwise, dispute that. They didn't always say it at the beginning. I have no doubt about that. It took them a while to. But I think there's a recognition of that. So I would hate in any suggestion to be impugning what she's saying. Not at all. But when she was saying, she's saying very forcefully because she believes it in her heart, and I don't dispute it. I don't dispute her integrity. She says the truth. But Ronan has a light to shine on this truth, as do I. Have a light to shine on this truth.
So the only one who hasn't is me, because
no,
I'm atheist.
No, I really don't believe that. No, I genuinely don't believe that, Susan. Honestly. No, I don't.
You just overlooked
and
it.
And I don't believe
that. I actually hadn't finished.
It's about
reserving a special kudos for you as someone who could shine a light from outside.
Okay, Mary Collins.
I wanted to say something. I'm quite upset by the fact that Ronan has come out here and he said that we're brought here for a row. Personally, I didn't come here for a row. I came here to have a considered debate on Pope Benedict. Now, obviously, coming from my area, what I have been dealing with over the last 20 years, I would speak on the child abuse crisis and child protection. That does not mean I deny any of the other good things that the Pope might have done that Father Joe wants to talk about or Ronan wants to talk about. I spent 5 days in Rome last year speaking to the bishops of the world and probably met more bishops from around the world than Ronan or Father Joe has, and met a lot of people from within the Vatican. And it was on child abuse. It was a good move by the Vatican, although they distanced themselves slightly from it. And I met there a Monsignor Charles Cicluna, who was the
Maltese guy.
Yes.
Yeah,
he was promoter of justice.
Yeah.
And he had done wonderful work. And he was the man that came out and said there'll be no more omerta. And I was at a meeting where he spoke to bishops and he said, no longer will you be able to cover up for abusers or not report cases, because he said, I am going to bring the penalties of the church down on you. He quoted the canon under which he was going to do it, and he had the power. He's the prosecutor. He quoted that, and he said it hadn't been done in the past, but I am going to do it in the future, because all these new policies and guidelines that are going to be brought in around the world, you'll either obey them or you'll have me to answer to. I spoke to that man afterwards and I said how wonderful it was. He got it. He was heading in the right direction. He was the man dealing with abuse. And from what he said to me and what speaking to others, I found that he had factions in the Vatican opposing him. But I came away from that meeting and I felt, as a Catholic and as an abuse survivor, that there was hope in this man being in charge of the abuse crisis around the world. And in October, he was, as is often done in the Vatican, he was moved out and up and sent back to Malta.
And at that point...
I said to myself, do I really want anything to do with this church anymore? Because it depends on which faction, which side you're on in this medieval court of intrigue in the Vatican.
Mary, doesn't it also depend on who's replaced him? I understand it's an American who's another
get-tough
guy. It's an
American who worked in Boston and who assisted Cardinal Law to deal with abuse cases.
Well, my understanding my understanding is that American is regarded as a credible guy who's going to follow on Cicluna's good work.
I'm sure he is. He's credible and he's acceptable, and you ask the survivors in Boston what they think of him.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Charles Cicluna been moved up and out from the Vatican, a man who was going to deal with the way it should be dealt with. And that is under Pope Benedict.
Could I just say,
we know there's corruption and there's intrigue and there's factions in the Vatican. And it shouldn't depend on which faction is in the ascendancy, who is appointed and who is fired. It's not always down to the Pope. There's a lot of influence there. And I think that's why the Pope is right to have step down. If he could not get a handle, get structure, the man who was dealing with the corruption in the Vatican, Archbishop Vinago, was there for 2 years and he was really getting a handle on the corruption. He was cleaning it up. What happened to him? Same thing has happened to Cicluna. He was moved up and out and sent to America. And that's what's the problem. As a Catholic, I just don't know if I want to be a Catholic anymore, because you've got people in this head of this church, the Vatican, and there's all these men there, and there's nothing but politics, infighting, and self-aggrandizement and ambition. That is not what a church is all about. And a holy man, as a pope, a spiritual man, how is he to deal with that?
Susan? I don't know.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one of the reasons why Geoffrey Robertson QC thinks that there may be litigation against the outgoing Pope is because of the fact of things like Mary is talking about, that whereas it does appear that progressive voices were silenced, this Pope was extremely reluctant to defrock and actually fully make priests accountable for what they had done. I mean, a lot of people would have expected that he would have moved very firmly against Father Maria Massel, for example, who had been protected by Pope John Paul, and he didn't. He moved, but he did not.
You're going against every credible church watcher in the world saying.
No, I'm
first
not.
First of all, Geoffrey Robertson
sorry,
is not a credible
finish,
person.
Please.
He is a polemicist.
Anti-church agenda, Ronan. That's
I'm
what
not,
you're dealing with.
You're listening to somebody. Look, I'm sorry. Can I please finish? It is not militant anti-church agenda. I have got my own thoughts and my own politics. They are just as reputable as yours.
Own politics, and this is all we're getting here is politics.
Father Maria Massel was sent off to a mansion in Florida. That is hardly a very severe punishment. And I think that, you know, it's interesting that Alex Gibney, who has made the award-winning documentary Mea Maxima Culpa, which is opening, thankfully, in Italy in a couple of weeks' time, he has been reported today as saying that some of the deaf men who were abused by a priest in America who was protected by the Vatican were this evening celebrating and having a sense that, you know, they had in some way, by coming out and making that film, that they had contributed to Cardinal Ratzinger or to the Pope moving on. So hopefully that is the case.
Okay,
but can I just say
last
thing?
Very, very push for time.
I think that what Mary said is absolutely true, that this is all about men living in a very self-referential system. They don't listen to the outside world. They don't listen to women. They don't listen to children. They listen to themselves and they fight among themselves.
Okay, Ronan, very briefly.
I don't know where to start. It's a completely bizarre programme with anything is capable of being said here, and there's no relation to reality in a lot of what's being said. I totally agree with Mary, though, that it's quite possible that there are factions in the Vatican. I suspect there always will be in any human institution, but I don't think she has proven that they're moving all the good guys out and letting the cynics back in, and I don't think that's Benedict's record.
And just that the faith community, which is a huge community in Ireland listening to this programme, they need to realise that we have made attempts also to celebrate the fact that Benedict XVI has been a tremendous leader of the church, and that they, you know, he has a whole powerhouse of prayer going with him as he enters this final phase in his life. And at the end of the day, no matter what we speculate and so on, whether it be the popular press or RTE or the cardinals themselves, the successor to Benedict XVI will be chosen by the Holy Spirit and by the power of the Holy Spirit. And if there's
the Holy Spirit does is prevent it from being completely
making a mess
ruined.
Of things. I know that, yeah. But at the end of the day, there will always be corruption with our human beings. And the 12 apostles were a motley enough crew, denial, doubt, and fear, and so on.
Okay.
That should not let us lose sight of the fact that it remains the Church of Christ Himself.
All right. Thank you all very much indeed. Father Joe McDonald, Senator Ronan Mullen, Susan McKay, and Mary Collins. We're back Tuesday night at 10. Till then, enjoy your weekend.
The Late Debate, presented by Audrey Carvel, was produced by Peter Hegarty. The broadcast coordinator was Jarlath Holland. The researcher is Richie Byrne, and sound supervision tonight was by Barry Kavanagh.